From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Next week, Pope Francis lands at Andrews Air Force Base, and the U.S. President will be there to greet him. He'll speak before the full U.S. Congress on Thursday. That is unprecedented. He'll address the UN. Word is he intends to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. The question is, just how hard does he plan to hit out at climate change deniers, at Wall Street, at our consumer culture, and more? This hour on point, Pope Francis comes to America. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Catholics, non-Catholics, what do you want to hear? What do you expect to hear from this Pope? Pope Francis, and Catholic or not, has his message come through to you? How do you hear it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. This Pope can be tough on the extremes of capitalism, on the global powers, on wealth and poverty. Here he was giving a mass in Manila in the Philippines in January, urging Catholics to address the problem of inequality all over.
We will see things in a new light, and thus respond with honesty, integrity, to the challenge of proclaiming the radicalism of the gospel in a society which has grown comfortable with a social exclusion, polarization, a scandalous inequality.
The Pope saying we will proclaim the radicalism of the gospel in a society which has grown comfortable with social exclusion, polarization, and scandalous inequality. We have an unusual guest who will join us in a moment, Cardinal Peter Turkson, head of the key Vatican Council that has helped craft Pope Francis's big, challenging message to the world. But first, to look at the Pope's agenda, his itinerary in the U.S., joining me from Rome is Elizabeth Dias. She covers politics and religion for Time magazine. She'll be traveling with Pope Francis during his trip to the U.S. Elizabeth, in Rome, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
He flies in on Tuesday from Cuba, and how long is he in the U.S., and what does his time look like here?
Sure. Well, he'll be in the U.S. for just over 5 days. He'll be spending about 3.5 days in Cuba, so it's not quite just a stopover. It's a bit more than that there, but when he gets to the U.S., it will be 2 days in Washington, then up to New York, and then down to Philadelphia for the Catholic World Meeting of Families, and then back to Rome on that following Sunday.
And the main stops on that journey?
Yes, so he will be staying at the Vatican's ambassador to the U.S. near the Vice President's house in Washington, and then he will be meeting with President Obama at the White House, big reception there on Wednesday morning with big papal parade, open Pope Mobile around the White House and the Ellipse. And then he will be speaking with all of the U.S. bishops who are gathering in Washington to hear him. So really excited to hear what he's going to say there. We'll get a real glimpse at his policy for the church. You know, he's really coming to speak to the local community. So there's that. He will be speaking to U.S. Congress also the next day, as you mentioned. He is canonizing a fairly controversial priest from who helped really found the state of California. And mind you, he'll be doing most of this all in Spanish. So I think only 4 of the 18 speeches that he has prepared are slated to be in English. So that's already something new. And then, goodness, he's really packing in so much into the schedule. In Philadelphia, he will be visiting a jail, meeting with families there. He will be, when he's in Washington, he will be visiting some of the homeless at Catholic Charities right after he leaves the Congress. So he is not missing any opportunity. I've only barely begun to tell you it all. And then, of course, we have to remember Pope Francis is the Pope of surprises. So the most memorable moments of this trip might be the ones we don't even know about yet.
How has the Vatican, the Pope, described his intentions in coming to the U.S. now?
Right. So they're being very clear. You know, the original reason that Pope Francis is coming to the United States is for this gathering of families, the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia, which is a global Catholic gathering, meets in a different city every 3 years. And so this was planned before he even became Pope. So it's really a pastoral visit for that, but it's quickly become much more. This is the longest trip that Pope Francis has taken. It's his 10th, and the Cuba-U.S. length is really quite substantial diplomatically, especially given the rapprochement between the two countries, which Pope Francis helped broker. And then, you know, it's so rare for him to speak, for any pope, to speak to a legislative body. Pope Francis did it in Strasbourg. But other than that, we had one example from John Paul II and one from Benedict, but this is on such a different scale, and combined with his other diplomatic endeavors and conversations while he's here, it's going to be quite something.
He'll be at the UN as well. No pope has spoken to the full U.S. Congress in this fashion before. John Boehner, leader of the House of Representatives, has invited many, the majority leader there. He is Catholic, of course, himself, but many of the popes' most important agenda items would appear to be in conflict with a lot of the Republican agenda. Did that give John Boehner any pause? How do Republicans, who dominate both houses of Congress, intend to deal with that?
I know. It's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. It's such a reversal also in American politics. I think the Republican Party has, for a long time, really come to count on the Catholic Church for some of its hard-hitting items every election cycle, sanctity of life, especially. And so it's funny now in many ways to be watching how the Pope is highlighting, he's highlighting areas like climate change, immigration, and traditionally poverty, those haven't been so much a part of the GOP platform. But, you know, I think we have to remember this Pope is still Catholic. He hasn't changed his mind about anything like, you know, speaking out for life and for marriage between a man and a woman. So,
though he has explicitly said, let's not make those the center of the Catholic message. That
he has.
There's been too much attention paid there.
Right. No, he definitely has. So, but you know, I don't think we're going to be seeing any wagging of the finger by the Pope. You know, we've never seen him do that. Really, in a really aggressive way. So I think we'll have to be really careful listening to what he actually does say. I think he will challenge everyone on all sides.
I guess that's what you mean. It depends what you mean by wagging of the finger. He's talked a lot about inequality. He's talked a lot about the poverty being ignored, the poor being ignored. He's talked a lot about people presuming to live at the sort of the top of a material pyramid while others suffer. I guess it does mean what you mean by wagging the finger. Elizabeth Dias, in Rome, she'll be covering the Pope's trip to the U.S. for Time magazine. Thanks very much for joining us, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
With us as well now, from the Vatican, is Cardinal Peter Turkson. Cardinal Peter, he's president of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, which is in effect the Vatican City's Ministry of Social Justice. Very prominent in the Catholic Church, was one of those who was talked about when it was time to name a new pope, just this last time, to choose a new pope. He is very influential right in the heart of the material that has been so important to this pope, Pope Francis. He joins us today from the Vatican. Cardinal Peter Turkson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks to you for having me on this program.
It's wonderful to have you. What's the Pope's goal in coming to the United States? He's never been there in his life, been here to the U.S. He's coming after laying out quite a bold agenda that has turned a lot of heads around the world. What does he hope to accomplish with this visit, Cardinal Turkson?
No, I think essentially the Pope comes to the U.S. as a pastor, as a pope, and so as a bishop. The bishop and the religious leader of the worldwide Catholic Church. And with his own, the encyclical, Last Laudato Si, the last encyclical he did, he likes to even extend the ambit of his own, reference to the whole world. So he addresses the whole world, the global world, also in the encyclical. So he comes essentially as a religious leader. He comes essentially as a pastor. And that's, I think, the paramount thing on his agenda, to be a pastor, not only to Catholics, but to the rest of the human family. And to get them, from his pastoral perspective and point of view, to have the human society, live happily, if you want, with a certain experience of common flourishing. This particular visit, however, as you were just asking a short while ago, is going to be preceded by a couple of others. So it's not just a visit to the U.S., which would have taken place if even there wasn't that thing about the UN and the Congress, because as you just heard, there's been this scheduled event in Philadelphia about the meeting of the family. So he was either going to be there or send a video message, and he's decided to be there. So he's going to start this visit with a visit to Cuba, preceded by some popes before him. John Paul was there, and other popes. So then he comes to the U.S. and he goes first to Washington, meets the priest over there as a first pastoral concern. So first meeting is with the pastors to establish, if you want, the collegial tone or the collegial character of his pastoral visit to the U.S. and then go on from there to the, if you want, after having met the religious, Catholic religious, head of in the U.S., then he goes on to the political, civil, civic leaders that will be in the Congress and the people who will be meeting there. So we're looking essentially we're looking at a pastoral program, a visit of a pastor to a country which has Catholics but which has, other people of other faiths.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the upcoming visit of Pope Francis to America, with the man in the midst of Francis's strong push on climate change, on poverty, on Wall Street, capitalism, and more. Cardinal Peter Turkson joins us from Rome, up out of Ghana, a very prominent player at the Vatican these days in the time of Pope Francis. He's president of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. In effect, Vatican City's ministry on social justice. This pope has paid a lot of attention to that. Cardinal Turkson joins us from the Vatican. Of course, many have anticipated the pope's visit, and as the pope has been very outspoken on the environment, on economics, and more, he's come into American politics. Here was Republican candidate Jeb Bush, a Catholic, saying that Pope Francis, that Pope should steer clear maybe of politics. That's not where he gets his advice.
I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or from my pope. And I'd like to see what he says as it relates to climate change and how that connects to these broader, deeper issues before I pass judgment. But I think religion ought to be about making us better as people and less about things that end up getting into the political realm.
Things that get into the political realm, that's not what religion should be about, said Jeb Bush there. But, of course, the Pope, in speaking out on the environment, you get into politics in a hurry. Here he is in May of last year, address outside the Vatican. My guest, Cardinal Turkson, very involved in all this. The Pope's encyclical on climate change. Here's Pope Francis warning of the dangers of not protecting the environment.
E questo deve essere l'atteggiamento.
Saying this must be our attitude toward creation. We must protect it, because if we destroy creation, creation will destroy us. Let's not forget that. The Pope just last May, and now he'll be before Congress. Cardinal Turkson joins us from the Vatican in Rome. What's the message we can expect the Pope to bring to Congress, where there is a conservative majority these days, Cardinal Turkson, who, as you well know, may not welcome his message on human man-made climate change, on some of the failings of capitalism? What will he tell them?
As you know, early on in your program, you referred to the Pope himself as a man whose message is not always predictable, because he sometimes reacts to the situation, even on the spur of the moment, and there have been cases where he's even laid aside prepared text to speak, and engage the audience or the group before him. This particular visit will probably have its challenges, because the Pope will have to be, doing all of this in English, And since it's not, you know, his first language or fluent in that, some of this may be limited. But as the Pope comes to the U.S., as I said at the beginning, comes as a pastor, certainly he's not coming, as he said in the encyclical Laudato Si. He recognizes that the church is not, you know, expert in the sciences, expert in politics or any of these areas. So he himself has admitted that the church therefore doesn't have the last word. And it's not, you know, Pope Francis is not the first to say this. Pope Benedict in Caritas in Veritate admitted the same, you know, the same thing. So I think we should not be looking or expecting that Pope Francis is coming to declare or proclaim the, you know, the last or definitive word in science or physics about climate change or even any of the environmental things. I think what, as a pastor, he's able to do is to address the human person who lies at the heart of all of these institutions. You know, institutions and structures are things we talk about, but they all created, run, maintained, and sustained by, you know, human minds, human hearts, and human conduct. And that is where, as a religious leader, he'll have a message to, you know, to address, you know, too. So that's really where we should be expecting to see, you know, the new things that, you know, Pope Francis would have to say in the United States. Not pronouncement on, you know, the last word on climate change, on physics, on atmospheric conditions, or, you know, and those are not his competency. He's not competent in those areas, so he's not going to also pronounce the last word in that.
He is a scientist, as you know, and the encyclical, which I think you were involved in bringing out, was quite firm on those fronts. You sound like you're backpedaling, Cardinal.
I'm just saying,
it sounds like it. When he was in Bolivia, he didn't pull any punches on either the environmental front or on global economics. As you well know, he was very fierce. Yes. He talked about the pain, death, and destruction that global capital's indifference to the poor and the planet can bring. He cited all the way back to Basil of Caesarea, an early theologian who called the extremes of capitalism the dung of the devil. Service of the common good is left behind. And speaking of politics, he called for change, real change, structural change. He said change 32 times. That doesn't sound like just the personal, structural change.
No, that's just what it is. So the Pope talked about, you know, climate change, but he did not define or, you know, make statement about what constitutes climate change and all of that. He talks about politics, but recognize also the different political persuasions. So that's what I mean. If he's going to be addressing all of those, all the items that you have listed,
yes,
end up being the effect of all of these systems on human existence and human life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he addresses his, you know, his attention. It's not politics as such, it's not capitalism as such, but capitalism as a system is run by people and it has effect on people. So that's what he would want us to look at, you know. So whatever he says, at one point it was communism and we had to look at its impact and its evils on society and human persons. Now, you know, capitalism is a big engine, you know, that motivates growth and initiative and incentive in the U.S., you know, in development and all of that,
mm-hmm.
creativity, inventiveness and
mm-hmm.
all.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, the fruits of research and all of that still need to be applied and applied to the well-being of human existence. And it is in the process of application, which are necessary done by human subjects, human beings and
sure.
all,
mm-hmm.
that the value system sometimes, you know, we need to be reminded about the value systems which direct and, you know, which govern our approaches and the type of thing we put emphasis on. So, you know, as I said in the beginning, it's so very easy, as it were. The Pope expresses and says so very many things, but the bottom line is still one. The only thing that God ever created, you know, two things, the world and the human person. These are the only two things that God created. And therefore, nobody can profess, especially for Christians and, you know, Catholics, nobody can profess belief in God, love for God, without loving and caring for what God has created. And that's a human person and, his environment, you know, they created, you know, natural order. Mm. So something so basic as that, can be amplified and spelled out in so very many ways. But that's basically what it is.
The bottom line.
All the systems of development. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. All the systems of development are basically to enhance the well-being of the human person and make his existence and life in this garden which God created and put us all in as life worth living.
We hear so that, but this Pope is a smart guy. He puts a lot out there, and he's very specific. I mean, in Bolivia, talking about real change, structural change. That's not an arbitrary term. He used the word change 32 times, and he said that land and lodging and labor were sacred, yes, rights. Sacred rights. Sacred, not a small, yes, word, yes, in the mouth of a pope.
He said that there
had to be work for their just distribution. It's a moral, uh-huh, obligation, and for Christians, a commandment. That would be interesting if his speech before the U.S. Congress is anywhere along similar lines. Cardinal Turkson, please stand by at the Vatican. We have callers for you. Ted in Boston. You're on with Cardinal Peter Turkson at the Vatican. Ted, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I agree that the Pope has been remarkable. I want to make a comment. I was at a presentation last night at the Harvard School of Public Health Center for Health and the Global Environment, and they talked about a speech that the Pope gave in Ecuador, while he's standing next to the president of Ecuador, basically saying to the president, you should not be selling off the indigenous tribes' lands to be for oil and gas rights, which the Chinese, I guess, are buying, and it's become a real disaster in one of the most pristine rainforests in the world. So I just thought it was another great example of him sticking to his guns and not saying just one thing about climate, but really, really breaking it down into major actions that different countries can take around the world.
Mm. Quite specific in that way. If I may, Carter, right, let me get one more, if I may, and we'll bring them both to you. Okay. Shoshana in Boston. Shoshana, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm a rabbi in Brookline, Massachusetts, uh-huh, and I'm involved in the interfaith climate movement. And I wanted to add in a thought that it's really exciting, the potential of the Pope's encyclical to inspire and bring together faith leaders and lay folks from all different backgrounds in this country. We're suffering from this crazy schism between left and right and social conservatives and liberals. And there is, for instance, a historic interfaith service at the National Cathedral on September 24th, the day the Pope is speaking before Congress. And that service has evangelical participation, Catholics, Muslims, mainline Protestants, liberal Jews, including myself. And that's really exciting because I don't know other issues where we can come together like that across these aisles. And the issue of how climate and environmental destruction affects the poor and future generations, my deep hope is that it can bring us as a country together to make some real changes. I'll use that word.
Do you give this Pope credit for that? Some of that interfaith strength?
I think it's huge. Yeah, there's an event, you know, called Answering the Call in Wellesley, and that is lay leaders who are really inspired to literally answer the call of the Pope. Folks who either were involved in climate or weren't, and got excited about the social ramifications of climate, and started to really hear, oh, wow, this is something that's a really religious issue. And I wanted to also respond to the distinction that you quoted Jeb Bush is making between religion as speaking to how to be a better person and politics speaking about how, mm-hmm, to act in the public sphere. I totally disagree with that as a distinction. I think how we are as people, politics is exactly talking to how we want to be better as human beings, you know, how we treat the land so that future generations can live, how we treat the poor. These are politics, but it's also deeply moral and deeply religious issues.
Shoshana, Rabbi, thank you very much for your call. Cardinal Turkson, there are two callers, two examples. One, the Pope wagging his finger, in a way, in Ecuador, saying, what's up with these oil leases? As the president stood there, the other, a rabbi calling in saying this Pope is breaking down walls and making interfaith communities more effective in tackling environmental issues.
Definitely. Yes, I would agree with both of them. And your thing about, you know, the Pope wagging a finger at people is interesting because last year, I think it was, and I took a message of the Pope to Davos. You know, that was closer for the, mm-hmm, World Economic Forum. And the message contained this also. It wasn't And for a long time, since the Second Vatican Council, the churches decided to move away from pointing accusing fingers. So that's what it's about, wagging fingers, pointing accusing fingers at the world of business, at the world of economics and all of that. Rather, following the spirit of the Second Vatican Council, the church is seeking ways of, you know, showing accompanying humanity in the various experiences that it makes in life. So instead of being condemnatory and accusing, the church rather wants to come and offer the wealth of its, you know, faith experiences to humanity to just help improve and enhance the level of existence. So that's why the wagging of finger is now becoming, as it were, almost an obsolete feature of paper, you know, gestures and paper, whatever. The thing now is the church accompanying, the church, you know, dialoguing with everything that is human to make this happen. So the thing about the land of the indigents being taken over and handed over to people, I was, you know, our council helped, you know, develop and plan a meeting here in Rome about the popular movements. We did a second one in Bolivia during the Pope's visit. And the three things that came out and are overriding are concern for work, concern for housing, and concern for and then for land. That these three things are what constitute, the absence of them constitute the poverty situations and poverty levels of several people in Latin America and elsewhere around the world. So when the Pope warns or invites the president not to give away the land of the indigenous people to oil prospectors and all of that, it's because he's taking from them the land and therefore their means of work and therefore the means of sustaining their families and therefore their access to wealth. You know, so this is very consistent with the Pope's own message, you know, in the past. His big interventions about the family and the need to respect and to maintain the family has been based on this. If parents and fathers have no access to, you know, cannot work, how can they maintain a decent family? How can they maintain a decent home? So that's what it is. The talk is hard, just as also in Bolivia, in Santa Cruz. He has some similar hard things to say also too. You know, the President Morales, who was also there, again about the level of work and the taking away of work and land, you know, from people. So this is very much consistent with the Pope. If we concerned about poverty, why do we address the issue and are not willing to look at the various basic fundamental causes of poverty? One of which is just, you know, when access to land is denied to people, they basically, you know, as it were, condemned to some forms of poverty. The other statement about, you know, Pope being a religious who's bringing all of us together, it's basically because these are the two things which bring us all of together. We exist as human family, and then, you know, we have the earth as our common home. There's nothing else that characterizes all of humanity more eloquently than these two features. So that's why addressing them, the Pope touches on all kinds of nerves and have everybody show interest in what he has to say.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the upcoming visit of Pope Francis to America, with a man in the midst of Pope Francis' strong push on climate change and poverty, his critique of capitalism, and more. Cardinal Peter Turkson joins us from Rome. Very prominent there, he is president of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, in effect, Vatican City's Ministry of Social Justice. That has been at the heart of the papacy of Francis. Pope was on ABC, a teleconference at the end of August, talking to people all over the country, and spoke here about the human duty of friendship and mercy, understanding big themes of Pope Francis, interpreted here by ABC News.
All of us bear responsibility for everyone else. No one can say, this is as far as my responsibility goes. We are all responsible for everyone. To help each other out as best we can. Friendship in society. That's what God created us for.
We are all responsible for everyone. Joseph is calling from Marshfield, Vermont. Joseph, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having this show. It's really great. You know, I think the Pope is the leader that we've been looking for in the world, someone with a vision, a larger vision of what it means to be human on this living earth. And he's telling us that there are two ways to know the world. One is science and the other is faith, and that we need both in order to be fully human beings. And I think that the Pope has that vision, and he's bringing it to the United States. We need to hear it here, because I think we've lost faith in our highest values. We've lost faith in our ability to live in this world in a peaceful way. And I think the Pope, his message is going to be that we can live together because we have faith in one another, we have faith in God, we have faith in the living world, and we know the world through science. Those are two ways that we can know the world and be fully human in it. And I think that's what the Pope is telling us.
Joseph, I appreciate your call. This Pope, a scientist by training, now Pope by undertaking. One more right here, if I may. Jeffrey in Atlanta, Georgia. Jeffrey, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm a musician, a church musician, who served for 20 years in the Catholic Church here in Atlanta. And though I'm now in a different denomination, I come at this from a somewhat informed point of view. My observation about this Pope is that nothing really has changed. He's engaging. He's certainly more personable than Pope Benedict was. But unless the Pope changes the doctrine of the Church that disenfranchises people and maintains a hierarchy of entirely men, then his words are only a PR campaign. He's changed the tone of the Church's message. But unless he changes doctrine, then in effect, he only wants to make the Church sound better when really nothing has changed. Now, that said, I can think of no better person to hold American politicians to some moral accounting.
It will be fascinating to see whether and how he does that. Jeffrey, I appreciate your call as well. I want to welcome into our conversation right now with me in the studio, Tiziana Deering, co-director of Boston College's Center for Social Innovation, professor of social work, teaches on poverty and leadership, former president of the Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Boston. Tiziana, welcome. It's nice to have you and Cardinal Turkson all here.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So here are two calls. One, Joseph says, wow, this is the leader we need. New message, new emphasis for the world. But then you hear the skepticism coming out of Jeffrey in Atlanta. He says, this is PR. This is the same doctrine dressed up in nice words and a nice face. It's PR. It's not a real change. How do you see it? As someone who really cares about the social work part of this.
Yeah, well, I certainly think it's a change. There's the question of the institution of the Roman Catholic Church, where we are with that, how the world receives its own internal policies. Then you have the idea that there is a prophetic voice. That's a religious term that means somebody who speaks truth to power. Cardinal Turkson talked about how the Pope is doing this as a pastor, but people are listening to it and experiencing it in a variety of their own political contexts. And what's happening is we've got somebody inserting an influential moral voice into a fairly secular context in a way we haven't seen in a long time. I don't think that's arguable. I think he has garnered attention for messages around poverty, love, and solidarity that we have not been able to get traction on, at least in the United States, and frankly, in a lot of ways, in the global advanced world for decades. So I think it's pretty hard to argue that he hasn't created awareness and traction where we've struggled. Those in this work have struggled for a long time to do so.
What about the doctrinal positions of the church and the organization of the church that our Atlanta caller is skeptical of?
Well, it's ironic as the girl on the phone that's the call that comes in before I come into the conversation.
The august woman.
Because there's always the question of women in the church. There's the question of the social values of the church. And those are progressive questions that will continue to be raised. What I want to make sure we don't do is once again bury the questions of poverty, injustice, and marginalization under other important institutional questions, because that's what always happens to the poor. We say, let's ask this question instead.
Let's talk about sexuality.
Right. For the love of God, let's talk about the poor. He's doing that.
Cardinal Turkson, are you confident that the Pope will make the circumstances of the poor and the systemic issues around them prominent? In this country, very often in recent decades, issues of conception, contraception, abortion have overshadowed a lot of other issues.
Yes, I think, it's likely, and I wish, he does make an impact in that regard. You see, taken individually and listed as abortion, contraception, and all, they appear to be so formidable issues. But if you related and brought them all, together, this encyclical that the Holy Father wrote, he wanted two issues to dominate the expression of thought in the encyclical. It's what he calls the integral ecology. The well-being of the earth as our home, natural ecology. And then there was the second part, the human ecology. The human ecology is about human existence, it's about human life in all its forms. And so whether you begin the discourse talking about conception, abortion or whatever, it's the beginning of human life. So it comes under this, under what the Pope is saying. So does the issue of, old age and how we treat and deal with our aged and all of that, how that also comes. And so does the issue of poverty. And so does the issue of the excluded. So all of this then come together. Basically, it's about human ecology. How do you deal with a human person as a group of persons in the consider human family? In the clip that you just played a short while ago, mm-hmm. when the Pope was talking about solidarity and living friendship and all, that again is that's the thing. If we recognize, for example, that yes, the Pope is speaking as a religious figure and he's speaking as a Catholic and so a Christian. And so his point of departure, for example, is the scriptures. Then, in the scriptures, there's only one grammar that, as it were, governs human existence. God, having created Adam and Eve, the next thing God created was fraternity, Cain and Abel as brothers. So from the same womb, therefore equal in dignity, but still differentiated in their endowments and in their skills. So this is the thing that we probably always need to remember. If the human family is a brotherhood, a sense of brotherhood, then the sense of dignity that we all share is not something that a state or any political system bestows on us. It's something that we have by reason of our birth. So despite our differences and endowments and all, the basic sense of the human dignity, the human person, is what needs to play out, is what needs to be protected.
But this Pope talks a lot, Cardinal, about how human social structures can inhibit that care for each other.
That is the point. That's the point. So why should human structures inhibit what we were created with, the grammar of our natural existence? Why should human structures make it difficult for us to realize what we were created to be? So why should human structures inhibit our vocation, from creation?
What is the Pope talking about when he and others talk about savage capitalism?
Sometimes I try, when the Pope came out with his book, for example, Evangelii Gaudium, there was a lot of talk about the Pope being critical about capitalism. So I went to do a word count. And capitalism was not used in that document. He talked about free market, unbridled market, and all of those things. But capitalism as such, it's a word that the Pope doesn't use very often. He talks about the manifestations of them, but do they necessarily have to constitute capitalism, become this,
He's talked about an economic system that values profit at any price, a colonialist structure that reduces poor countries to mere providers of raw materials and cheap labor.
Just that he doesn't call them capital. He doesn't use the word
capital. Well, he hardly needs to, does he? He hardly needs to.
Okay, so this is interesting because mm-hmm. it just means that we go from the presentations of the Holy Father mm-hmm. and it is we who do the equation. It is we who say that the attack on free market and all of that means capitalism. You see? So that's something we do. That's not something the Pope does.
I don't know.
There's a difference in this, you know?
He seems like you're a pretty common sense guy. Well, free markets and capitalism are pretty closely entwined. As you say, there are many attributes there as well. We're fascinated by how he'll bring this message into this country, a country he's never visited before, and into a U.S. Congress with a majority Republican Party. Carol in Austin, Texas. Carol, thank you for calling.
Yes, I wondered why the Catholic Church has not changed the fact that you cannot practice birth control, and you have families with poor families with 6 and 8 and 10 children who cannot possibly take care of those children. Where's the compassion for those children who don't have the love of two parents? If they were, they couldn't work 24 hours a day and take care of 10 or 8 or even 6 children. It's hard enough to take care of one, to give them the education and the love and the family values that children need. How can they possibly give them what they need, and why would you expect other people to take care of these children?
Carol, I appreciate your call. Cardinal Turkson, you hear the question there. Where's the compassion in a doctrine that doesn't permit birth control, therefore very large families that
again,
people have trouble taking care of?
That's not quite exact. It's not quite exact. The Catholic Church has room for birth control. The Catholic Church, in fact, does not prohibit birth
control.
You mean
the rhythm method?
No, okay, so then you're talking about method. You see? Mm-hmm. So the thing about you remember the Pope once having in one interview from from the Philippines having made a thing about advising people not to bring forth rabbits, and people took him on.
Mm-hmm.
So the Pope is not, the Church is not against birth control. It's not against regulating birth. It's not against
what about
all
contraception.
Of those. The Pope is so what the Church has to say is about method. Method which sometimes, from the Church's understanding of its doctrine and all, would appear to interfere, with the natural, order and the natural, system of a human person. So birth control itself is not. It's not forbidden by the Church. In fact, it is. It is enjoined. It is advised, and it is. People are encouraged.
I think
not
Carol's
to,
thinking about contraception, and I get the distinction you're making. But of course, many Catholics have moved away from that part of church doctrine. Our time grows so short, and so many callers for you. Ita in Nashville, Tennessee. Ita, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
I want to go back to your question about my hope of what he could say to our Congress,
mm-hmm.
and that the most important thing, utmost important, is our planet and its health and its people. And then to say to this group to find a way to move away from your differences and find a way to work together. Our Congress must begin to work together. We have so many issues that they are being so political with.
Yeah.
And it's time to be quite serious about what's happening.
You're hoping for some inspiration right there for collective effort here. I appreciate that, Ita. Tiziana Dearing, what about the Catholic Church itself in this country? Not all American cardinals have enthusiastically endorsed this Pope's call on the environment and climate change by any means. How do you see the reception of the Church to this Pope and his message?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is in Catholic United States, we see a political continuum of what people choose to focus on, at least in their public lives and sometimes in the pulpit,
mm-hmm.
which goes from the social sexual issues on the more conservative end of the continuum to the policy and economic issues around poverty and justice and the value of work, mm-hmm. et cetera, which tends to go towards the progressive end of the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting about this Pope is he's bringing the whole continuum. And that's not something that we've participated in as Catholics in the United States in a while, is a discussion up and down that, which is sometimes
referred. Is he really bringing the whole continuum? Because I'm reading here about folks who are not so crazy about this Pope, conservative American Catholics, among whom his popularity has dropped, if the polls are any indication.
Absolutely, because conservative American Catholics, if they're conservative Americans who mm-hmm. are also Catholic, are going to have a more conservative economic message that this Pope is not supporting. regardless or in respect for what the cardinal says, I've read this encyclical a number of times. It is a sharp critique of the overwhelming moral dominance of market philosophy. Mm-hmm. It is a sharp critique of the way that we've put the human in service to the economy versus the economy in service to the human. And their conservative economic principles aren't going to like that very much. We have to remember that we have both a Catholic for the Catholics in America mm-hmm. and a political context, and they are not directly aligned. Mm-hmm. And conservative American philosophy is conservative about the market economy in a way that this Pope, at least in his writings and the speeches he's made elsewhere, clearly has not been.
Cardinal Turkson, we just have half a minute left with you. What do you expect the Pope will wake this country up to, if that's his goal?
No, so following up on what as Speaker just said, I would wish very much that in the United States, as elsewhere around the world, we first appreciate what we are as believers. So as Christians, before we go into whether we conservative or progressive or whatever, the basic thing that is addressed to us, the call to discipleship, is to become first and foremost a Christian. It is not. It is so we should not be coming to our Christian calling from, from whether we are, Republican, Democrat, or whatever. But we first and foremost respond to a call to discipleship, and then we become whatever we become in society.
Cardinal Turkson, with that, I'm afraid we're out of time. We're so grateful to you for being with us from the Vatican today. Cardinal Peter Turkson, thank you. Thank you very much. And Tiziana Dearing of Boston College, thanks so much as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.